This is episode 260 of Wheel Bearings. I'm Sam Abuel Samad from Guidehouse Insights, and I'm all by myself this week. Well, sort of. Robbie is off in Monterey, hobnobbing with the fancy folks at Pebble Beach, and Nicole is on her way back from having emptied her nest and delivering her youngest daughter to school. So it's just me and a few people that I have done interviews with in the last few days, as this week was the Woodward Dream Cruise here in the Detroit area, and had a chance to sit down and talk with Tim Kaniskis, the head of the Dodge brand, Mickey Bly, the head of propulsion systems engineering at Stellantis, and Jim Owens, the marketing and brand manager for Mustang and Shelby at Ford. So enjoy these interviews, and we will talk to you later. First up is Tim Kaniskis, the CEO of the Dodge brand. All right. Hey, thanks for your time today, Tim. I really appreciate this. And I'm looking forward to seeing the Charger Daytona in person tomorrow night.
I'm trying to get those lights out of the way.
I want to go through some of the stuff that you're announcing this week. Well, most of the focus is going to be on the Charger Daytona SRT concept. But before we get into that, I want to talk a little bit about the stuff you announced last night as we're recording this, which is the end of production for the Charger and Challenger as they exist today at the end of 2023. This thing that you're doing with the allocations and Dodge Garage and how that's all going to work. So what is the process going to be? You're going to allocate all the vehicles to dealers all at one time. Is there going to be an opportunity for customers to order and specify their own vehicles, or do they just have to pick from what gets built?
You know, it's not a really a Dodge problem. It's has always been an industry issue. And with COVID and chip shortages and things like that, it's become even more of an issue with availability of cars and things like that. And the allocation process is always very confusing to customers, because I totally understand, you know, I'm an enthusiast as well, and I've had to buy products myself where, you know, it gets confusing. If you're a customer and you want to buy a car and you're willing to pay for the car, why can't I just have the car? It gets confusing in that, you know, our first customer is our franchise business partner, our dealers, and we have to sell to our dealers, and our dealers ultimately in turn sell to the customers. So we have to have a methodology by which we allocate our cars to the dealers. We've been doing this forever. Everybody does it. And when you have plenty of supply, it's a non-issue. But when you get into a supply crunch, it always becomes a problem. And when you get into limited production cars and things like that, it's always a challenge. So what we did, or what we're doing for the final end of production, is we don't want someone to say, make up a car. I'm looking for a Challenger, jailbreak, spec'd as such, and I really want to go buy this car. And they were to go into a dealer and order the car, and that dealer didn't have the sales history to earn an allocation for that particular product. So that customer could end up waiting a long time and having that car never built. Now, sometimes when there's many years left of the life cycle, eventually they'll get that car picked up and they'll get their car built, and it's a delay, but you know, they'll get the car. But when you're going to the cliff, when you're going to the end of production, if they don't get their car, that's it. It's over. It's done. It's a real problem. So what we said was, okay, we've got to try and help these customers, and we've got to be as transparent as possible. So let's not put out an allocation every month. Let's put out the allocation of every single car that we can build until the end of production. Sure, we'll hold back a little bit, because there's going to be, of course, the inevitable chip shortage or something like that, and I don't want to get ahead of my headlights. But let's put out everything that we think we're going to be able to build for the last year, literally down to the trim. How many RTs you're going to be able to build, how many scat packs, how many Hellcats, how many red eyes, how many jailbreaks, everything by trim, and then break it down to the individual dealer and make it up. We have 2,600 dealers in the country. Let's just make it up and say there's only five. That particular dealer over there, he's going to get 50. That dealer's going to get 100. That dealer's going to get 25. That, on and on and on. And then within that, the dealer who's getting 50, he's going to get five of these, 10 of these, 12 of these, whatever, all the way down the list. And we're going to post that on our website. That way you'll know I'm looking for a Challenger Super Stock. I know that I can go to that dealer in my local market and he's been allocated to earn 12 of them. I go in and order the car from him. Let's say I don't go. The next week, I'm going to update it again. And that 12 is then going to change to 3. Uh-oh, I better hurry up. There's only 3 left. I got to go in and order that car. The next week, it's going to go to 0. And they're going to go, okay, I can't go to that guy. I've got to go to the next guy. Who's the next guy on the list that I can go? And that way they know when they do order their car, they are assured that they're ordering it from a dealer that has allocation to get it built, and they're going to ultimately get their car.
Okay. And one clarification, I think, as I understand with the jailbreak program, part of that is vehicles can be specified with different combinations that aren't part of that haven't been part of the regular build combinations in the past. And who is going to get to specify what that is? Is that going to be the dealer? Once they get their allocation, they'll say, okay, I want a purple Challenger scat pack with these these other options, or would that be a customer that would
Great question. Everything that I've spoken about up to this point, those are all ordered and configured by the customer. Okay. However they want to order it, whatever colors, whatever options, spec'd by them, ordered through the dealer, all by them. Now, jailbreak is a unique example because jailbreak, they can pretty much order all over the board anything they want. But we allocate jailbreaks individually, no different than say, I want a Challenger, I want a Charger, I want a Scat Pack, I want a Hellcat. We allocate jailbreaks specifically. So if you were to go into a dealer to order a jailbreak and that dealer didn't have allocation, that car would never get built. And that's why we want to communicate, this is where you go, this is how you get your car built. Where the confusion comes in is all of these cars are spec'd by an individual customer. Where the confusion comes in is we're going to have 6 end-of-life special editions. Those 6 end-of-life special editions, which we're going to roll out between now and SEMA, we have dates on every one of them. And on that date, we're going to send out a press release and say, here's what that version is. Here's what it looks like. Here's the specs. Here's the features. All of those are going to be built by us. Those are not going to be ordered. Those are just kind of the cherry on the top. Think of it like a sneaker drop. Hey, 50 purple ones, and those 50 are going to go to the highest volume guys around the country. If you want one, here's where they're going.
Okay, great. Thank you. All right. Moving on from the end of the current generation to what's coming next. Let's start with the Hornet. This is a new product segment for Dodge. And, Dodge has had an amazing renaissance over the last decade, with this really focusing on muscle cars. You've lost some of the previous nameplates that you had, but the nameplates that you've got have had a remarkable renaissance this decade. And where does the Hornet fit into this as part of this muscle car ethos for the Dodge brand? And how does it differ from a certain other vehicle within the Stellantis family that it shares a lot with?
Yeah, the Hornet's going to be a real fun one for us, because if you don't know anything about Dodge, if you don't follow Dodge, if you don't care about Dodge, and you were to ask that type of a person, hey, who is the customer that's buying Dodge vehicles today? They will be probably way far off on who it is. Dodge actually has the youngest demographic in the entire industry. We have a very young customer buying our cars. And when you look inside the individual cars, Charger, and specifically the mainstream variants of Charger, are driving our youngest customer base. So that told us that we have the next generation of people that are looking for stuff that's fun and interesting to drive, trying to find things in segments that appeal to them. We looked at the compact UV segment. The compact UV segment has no correlation to Dodge. You would never look at that segment and go, oh, well, that's the next natural place Dodge is going to go. No way. That segment is driven by price, value, fuel economy. They are very pragmatic purchased vehicles. If you look at the customer responses of why they bought their cars, and they literally have reams of data of why the people bought them. You don't get the stuff that feels like Dodge, like power, acceleration, fun to drive, vehicle image. You don't get to those things until like 20, 30, 40 on the list of reasons to buy, which is essentially might as well be zero, right? By the time you get that low. So all of those buyers aren't looking for a Dodge. That would be what all the experts would say is, this segment makes no sense for you. What we're saying is, wait a minute, we've got the youngest buyer. We have data that shows our youngest buyers are looking for things that are different than the mainstream offerings that they can find from anybody else. And that's why they're coming and buying Pentastar chargers from us, because it's different, it's unique, it's got a personality, it's got an attitude. And we said, wait a minute, that segment is the fastest growing, hottest segment in the industry. It's 1 million units today. It's projected to go to 1.5 million. It's going to grow 50% in the next 5 years. And it's all young people driving that growth on commoditized vehicles. We're like, this is the perfect little segment for us to go in and rile it up. Because with that many cars, I just need a fraction of it. Just a fraction of that is good business for me.
Well, that's actually really interesting that Dodge is, you know, got such a young demographic compared to a lot of other brands. And I think from there, let's jump into what's next. You know, what's the big new thing that you're announcing this week, which is the Challenger SRT, or the Dodge Charger Daytona SRT concept, and this shift to electrification. I hear from a lot of people that it's like, oh, I don't want an electric Charger or Challenger. You know, I want a big brawny V8, that makes lots of noise. And listening to the presentation the other day on this vehicle and reading about it, it seems like you've really tried to capture what it is that people love about these cars. At the same time as you move into this new era of electric vehicles, and perhaps, you know, maybe the fact that, you know, you've got such a young demographic might actually be really positive as you make this move to electric, because it seems like they're probably more likely to be interested in going electric. Tell us a bit more, you know, kind of the overview of the Charger Daytona.
That younger demographic is much more open to the transition to electrification. And we look at the 13 million people that are really brand ambassadors. They're not followers of the brand, they're brand ambassadors, because they're highly, highly engaged. Some of them might not come along with us initially. Some of them will resist no product like that. And this is into them thinking, I don't know how this fits in our brand positioning. But when you drive them, you immediately go, wait a minute, there's some real performance potential here. And you know this, even just the cars, even though they're not trying to be, because you can't deny that instantaneous torque. So we said, we've got to build a plan to transition. We can't just wake up one day and say, hey, we've gone electric, come on along, this is great. Nobody's going to do that, right? That's why we made this 2-year plan. And we said, we want to go in steps. We want to celebrate the end, because that's what got us to where we are. Then we want to have a transition. And that transition, honestly, is Hornet. Because I think Hornet is going to be a really good test. People are going to listen to the story on Hornet, and they're going to say, wait a minute, there's two versions. There's a gas version and there's a PHEV version. The gas version, it's fast, it's quick, it's got all-wheel drive, it's got torque vectoring, I can get track back, I can get Brembos. I'm going to get that one. Then they're going to go, wait a minute, all the journalists are driving this PHEV, and they're saying this thing has almost 400 pound-feet of torque. It's got seat-of-the-pants feel like a V8 and a compact UV. It's got push-to-pass technology that I can literally have 25 horsepower on demand to improve my 0-60 times. Wait a minute, there's something cool here. There's something to this electrification. That's going to get people comfortable with, wait a minute, the electric one's actually better than the gas one. Okay, step one. Then we go to Daytona. People are going to go, whoa, wait a minute. Now I've got a full battery electric car that my halo, my fastest, my best of the best is this 800-volt Banshee system. And it's going to give me all of the things that I'm used to in a muscle car. It's going to give me that feeling of not linear acceleration, but actually shifting. It's going to give me that rumble, that burble of the exhaust and the changes in the exhaust note. It's going to give me that huge acceleration factor. It's going to give me all those things. Oh, wait, it's electric. Ah, okay, I'm fine with that.
And this, you mentioned the exhaust, and this is probably the single most unique aspect of this car and this powertrain that, that you're developing, you know, you think of EVs, you think of zero emissions. You know, I don't need an exhaust pipe. There's no exhaust pipe, but you've got exhaust pipes. Tell us more about this Fratsonic exhaust system. What is that all about? How's that work?
Yeah, when we first started talking about this, people thought I was actually crazy. And I said, you got to think about picture. Everybody's been there. Picture a pipe organ. The first time you ever saw and heard a pipe organ, it immediately clicked in your brain. You heard the sound, you heard the deep tones, you heard the totally unique sound of that. And then you saw those big staggered pipes and it just clicked in your brain and it made sense. I said, if you look at a car today, look at a normal internal combustion car today in the exhaust note. People a lot of times don't even think about what that sound is. It's like magic. Oh, it's a gas car, it makes sound. Well, it doesn't have to. I mean, we have active noise cancellation. We have sophisticated exhaust systems. We can make a gas car silent today. We just don't because no one's ever asked us to do it. So you put gas in a car, that gas burns, it moves a piston, that piston moves air, that movement of air comes through a pipe, we tune the pipe and it makes a sound and everybody thinks it's magic. Wow, look at the sound, it's great. We all tune it, we have very characteristic sounds. There's no difference with electrification. With electrification, I can move that air the same way, but if I move the air the same way, it's speaker. Everybody can do it, it's easy. I can put a speaker in the car and I can make some sound. Okay, so what? We don't want to do that. We said, let's look at how a gas car makes sound today. It produces that air and the frequency and the flow and the speed and the volume of that air based on a couple of things: throttle position, vehicle speed, whether I'm shifting, I'm not shifting, the load of the end that the engine's under. All of those things change the dynamics of the movement of the air. Let's take all those inputs. They all still exist on an electric car. How much pedal am I giving it? Am I wide open throttle? Am I going up a hill? How much is my load? Am I shifting? Am I not shifting? Am I downshifting? All of those same inputs, let's put those all into the system. And then let's move that air, not through a speaker that's sitting in the car. Let's move that system, that air through a set of pipes and chambers and an exhaust pipe. So it actually comes out the back of the car. So you get the spatial feeling of the sound is outside. The sound is back behind the car. And it makes all the difference in the world. 126 decibels out the back, outside. All of a sudden now gives me that rumble back, gives me that feeling back inside the car.
So is that, is that what it's going to sound like? Is it going to be like a deep throaty rumble, like something like you might hear from a Hellcat, or is it going to be something else entirely? What sort of sound can we expect to hear from this?
It's a great question. And we worked on this for a long, long time because you can generate a sound any way you want. I mean, some people are going down the super high tech, you know, Jetsons type sounds. Mm-hmm. And some people are saying, hey, I want to recreate the sound of a V8. Some people say they want to call their cars, you know, turbocharged cars and things like that. We're like, no, let's be honest with these people how we're doing this. And let's make a new sound that we think is forward-looking, high tech, and fits with the name. We call it a Banshee. So it is a screaming, almost jet engine electronic sound at wide open throttle. So you get this Banshee wail at wide open throttle. But when you come off of that Banshee wail, it settles into a deep idling rumble. And the key to the whole thing is when you hear it, there's something very comforting about it. It's new, it's fresh, it's modern, it's different, but there's something that reminds you of something. And what that is we built into the bass track. You'll never notice it. You'll only notice it now because I'm going to tell you, but we built into the bass track that when the bass is hitting, the cadence of that bass is literally the firing order of a Hemi V8. You'll never see it. You'll never notice it, but it will make you feel comfortable. It's almost like the old subliminal advertising. I don't know what it is, but I'm comfortable with it. I like it, man. And when it's full throat and I hear that Banshee screaming, that's cool.
Yeah, it's funny. When I first reviewed the Tesla Roadster back in early 2008, when it first came out, you know, I'd driven the Lotus Elise and I'd driven lots of other cars. And, you know, that Roadster was, you know, was really quick and was really fun. But that lack of sound, that lack of that visceral response feedback that you get was something that's always been kind of missing from EVs for me. It's, you know, I love the way EVs feel when you drive them, but that absence of the sound, that visceral feedback, it does seem like it's something that's missing. And it's fascinating to hear what you're going to be doing with this. I can't wait to hear this thing in person. So
that's also why we're putting the EROP system, you know, we patented the EROP system as well. And, you know, we had really, I'll call them spirited debates internally, because, you know, we actually added a multi-speed transmission to the car. It doesn't make the car any faster. So, you know, all the experts will tell you, well, wait a minute, you're adding cost to the car. You're adding development costs and you're adding piece costs to the car, and it's not making the car any faster. And you tell me, out of every conversation, you're all about, you know, maximizing the performance, yet you're adding a feature that is adding investment and adding cost and is not adding performance. I said, no. We say performance is an attitude, and this is going to give us attitude. This is going to give us the driving feel and the excitement that's missing in linear acceleration. Linear acceleration is by far the most efficient. There's no question. But it also gets stale. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's. I think that's a great way of describing, you know, performance is an attitude, and especially for a brand like Dodge, because, you know, you can make the argument that, you know, a Tesla Model S Plaid is, you know, a classic American muscle car in terms of its core performance characteristics. It's really fast in a straight line. Yeah, the handling, you know, maybe not quite so much, braking, but it's really fast in a straight line. And obviously, you don't want Dodge to be the same thing. And that's one of the dangers, you know, with the transition to EVs. Most EVs, you know, electric motors all basically sound and feel the same, unlike internal combustion engines that have more distinct characters to them. And it sounds like you've really found a way to create some of that Dodge character, to create a unique character for your brand that would justify somebody saying, yeah, I want a Dodge instead of, you know, a Ford or a Chevy or a Tesla.
So we hope.
Yeah.
So, and you know what, if you look at the industry transitioning to EVs, if we can make people accepting of EV technology in a muscle car, you can do it in anything.
Okay. So one last area, we've only got a few minutes left that I wanted to dive into. In the presentation the other day, talked about, for when you start launching some of these vehicles in 2024, you're looking at three kind of performance levels from the factory, and then other stuff that you're going to offer through Dodge Direct Connection. I think up to six different performance levels. How's that going to work? Are we talking about software changes, or are there actually going to be hardware changes that are involved in this? What are you looking at there?
So normally you would require hardware changes, but we're planning for this in the development of the car right up front, which is going to help us avoid the majority of that. And it's also the reason that we launched Direct Connection when we launched it, because we've told everyone very clearly that we're only in the pilot phase of Direct Connection, because we wanted to learn everything that we were going to screw up first with a small set of dealers. Our power broker dealers are the only dealers that are allowed to sell Direct Connection. So we're learning as we go with those power broker dealers. We're understanding how our e-commerce website works for selling these parts and how all of the mechanics of that is coming together. Once we have that really dialed in, we will expand it to more power broker dealers. And at that point, it will be mostly ICE. But at that same time, we'll be launching Hornet. And within Hornet, the first Direct Connection stuff will be for our GLH, our Goes Like Hell model. That will help the transition. And then when we get to the Daytona, we should have it all sorted out by then, that each of the three power levels have already built in your hardware. Now, I'm going to have to probably give you some electronics as well, not just a software download. I'm probably going to have to give you some electronics. But if you know anything about the stage kits that we're doing on the ICE cars and on the Hornet, we give you a control box today. You have to buy our control box. You have to hook it up. You have to download it. You have to program it. You have to do all of that stuff yourself. We'll try to do that same thing in the next generation. And since we're planning for it now, it's going to allow us to open up modes. It won't be just power. We're going to be able to give you, you know, slam modes for car shows. We're going to be able to give you donut modes. We're going to be able to give you all kinds of other stuff that we can give as well, as long as we have that type of a control box to go along with it.
All right. for, I guess, as part of this range of powertrain or, you know, power options that you're going to have on these vehicles, are features like the multi-speed transmission, is that going to be used across the board for Dodge? And is that going to be something that's unique to Dodge, or is the eRupt or something like it going to be on other, you know, some of the other Stellantis brands as well?
Well, the only car that we're talking about right now, since, you know, it's technically it's a concept car, the only one that we're talking about right now is the 800 volt Banshee. TBD on exactly where we're going to deploy all that technology throughout the lineup. You know, we need certain things that differentiate the lineup. So I can't put everything that we talk about in the Banshee in every single car. So we got a little bit of time to still sort that out. Will other brands within the family, within the company, take on some of that technology? Maybe, if it fits their brand positioning. You know, our CEO, Carlos Tavares, is very big on proper brand positioning and using the things that make sense for your brand, not just grabbing everything because it exists in the parts bin of the company. It needs to make sense for what you're trying to do as a brand. So TBD on some, if somebody else is going to want to use it. Now, some of the things, they're clearly Dodge and nobody would probably want them, but not my call. That's the CEO's call.
Yeah. Well,
I didn't invest in him. He did.
Yeah. Well, for, you know, having listened to you for a number of years now, you know, as you've been leading the Dodge brand, you know, I can really sense the enthusiasm you have for what this brand is supposed to be and what, you know, what you're trying to build it into. And, you know, it's fascinating to see you talk about, you know, this transition to electrification, you know, through plug-in hybrids and then battery electrics. And it's good to see, you know, somebody leading a brand with such enthusiasm. Do you have any final thoughts that you want to share about kind of what you're doing with Dodge, where the Dodge brand is going?
Yeah, you know, a lot of our very traditionalist fans have said to me, we thought you would be the last one to transition to electrification. We thought you would be the holdout in the industry that would carry the ICE flag forever. And what I say to all of them is, the industry has invested $500 billion. There is no mulligan for $500 billion. This party is going to come, whether anybody likes it or not. You can try and avoid it, or you can look at it like any true racer does. Any racer in any series takes the rule book and figures out how to twist those rules in their favor and win the race. We looked at the rule book. We looked at the party that was coming, and we said, you know what? Let's go to the party and let's dance like Dodge dances, and let's see what we can do with this.
Well, it sounds like you've definitely got the right attitude to be leading this brand into the future. So good luck and congratulations on the new products and this concept. And thanks for your time.
Thank you.
All right.
Have a good day.
Bye.
Yeah, bye.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Next up, I've got Mickey Bly, the head of propulsion engineering at Stellantis.
All right. Sitting here with Mickey Bly, the VP of propulsion engineering,
yep, head of propulsion engineering for
Stellantis. And we just saw the global unveil of the Dodge Charger Daytona Banshee, or Dodge Charger Daytona SRT Banshee.
Right.
This is a concept that gives us a little preview of where the Dodge brand is going with e-muscle cars, which we first heard about a little over a year ago, your EV day. Getting your perspective on this car, you know, what were you trying to achieve? What was the goal in creating an EV that is a Dodge muscle car?
Yeah. Well, you know, Tim's very kind of forward thinking. He knows what the Dodge brand is and what the loyalists, the brotherhood of muscle wants in their vehicles. And when Tim got us together about a year and a half ago, he said, listen, he knows he has to go into the EV space. You know, the heavy Hemis, that they've been great to the company, have been great to the brand. But he really said, hey, if we go into this space, we got to do it right. We got to be something different. We can't just be what everybody else is getting. So as we said at Stellantis EV Day last year, to refer to, you know, we're going to bring together an electrification strategy that really leverages scale. So what does that mean? From an architecture point of view, you know, we've announced that we're going to do these four architectures, right? That we're going to install a small, medium, large, and frame. So Tim said, great. I need to participate in that because he gets the scale and the value. But I need something different. I need to make sure the Dodge brand doesn't just become one of the other EV performance, EV vehicles. So when he set us aside, he said, you know, give me something different. Give me more power. Give me more excitement. Give me more sound. Give me more feeling in the vehicle. So he kind of set us aside, said, you know, I want this, what's now been released as Banshee, to be something unique to him. So he took us down that path. And he set some pretty formal expectations from it. So there's no doubt this will stick out from all the other brands that we're producing EV. It's just going in a different way. It's going in a different place. All-wheel drive, even though you saw today the concept, 800-volt system inside of it, two EDMs on the vehicle, but very importantly is a multi-speed transmission or gearbox on it also. And all these things together is what he called the visceral feel of the vehicle is he's just pushing us. And, you know, with Tim, you get to, I want this, and then you give it, you say, I can do it. And he's, oh, I didn't ask enough. So he asked for a little bit more and a little bit more and a little bit more. So really that's what it is how do we make this thing, make sure the loyalists of Dodge, that he's built a brand over the years, get something exciting. And that's what we're going to deliver to him.
And I mean, you've certainly seem to be on the right track with this, because one of the things I hear a lot from listeners to the podcast and readers of the stuff I write that are fans of the current muscle cars, the Hellcats, the Hemis, you know, is, you know, I love the sound, the feel. And that's always been one of the things about internal combustion engines for 130 years is you can design it, you can give the different engines a distinct feel and characteristic, and you drive them and a lot of times, you know, if you know what you're looking for, you can tell what it is you're driving without even looking at it. And with EVs, up till now at least, that hasn't been the case. You know, electric motors are all pretty much the same. They don't vibrate. Yeah. You know, they don't really make much in the way of sound. And that's the first real unique thing here, is this is the first EV with an exhaust system.
Yeah.
So how did you guys come up with this concept?
Well, it's funny because we started from what the brand's vision is. You know, feels like a Dodge, sounds like a Dodge, performs like a Dodge. And you know, Tim just unleashed us. He said, listen, come back with crazy ideas. What can we do differently? So there's some guys out there that were doing simple speakers. We know there's some regulatory speaker sounds you have to do driving around. And Tim was like, that doesn't work for me, right? I need something different. So they said, okay, make a really loud
on Zimmer soundtrack.
Yeah, exactly.
Your muscle car.
He said, well, make a really loud version of it. We'll record a Hemi. And he's like, no, guys. We got to make this real. So he set off the chassis guys and the audio guys, which is another team within Stellantis, and said, listen, give me something different. And he had this vision in his head. He said, imagine sitting in the most famous, beautiful church you've ever been with a pipe organ system. You know, there's a guy in the front, guy or girl in the front of it, playing on this simple little keyboard. He's like, they're not doing much. But above them is these beautiful pipes and this sound that resonates within the church walls. It vibrates, it bounces all over, and you feel it in your throat, you feel it in your body. And that's what he set the guys off. He says, make me the church pipe organ. How do you make something on a car that's like that when you don't have a combustion engine? And what the team's created is this resonating system that creates an air, a velocity of air inside of it, has a number of chambers inside of it. Now you feel it on the back of the car, and it's going to be an exciting. And inside the car, you feel it. It vibrates. It sounds cool. And they're tweaking what the final sound will like. You heard kind of a part of it today. It's going to really be unique. There's a lot of buried noises inside of there that maybe has some heritages.
Tones at different levels.
Oh yeah, and maybe some firing orders going on inside of there to kind of get reminiscence of what the Hemi's done, which has been a great engine for us. So that's how it really started, and we worked on concepts for the last 6 months. My team's responsibility is really give them the inputs. How do we communicate to him what's traditionally a throttle pedal connected to an engine, connected to gas, to combustion out the exhaust? How do I translate that into now a pedal in the car, power pedal in the car, that creates electric power in a EDM, electric drive module, and that gets torque in the end. So I had to connect the two of how do you make an IC combustion resonating air pulse through the system connected to a drive unit. So that's what my team's doing.
So that right pedal is the equivalent of the keyboard for the organ player.
Exactly.
And you know, having heard it now, you know, the thing you don't want to do is just have a recording of a Hemi or a Hellcat, because that would be inauthentic. And you know, other manufacturers have tried some stuff. You know, Ford's done some things with the Mustang Mach-E, which is okay, but it's not the, you know, it's distinct to that vehicle, but it, you know, it's not nearly as visceral as what we just heard, and you know, it's clearly not the whole story that we've heard yet.
Yeah, there's more to it.
When we see that thing running down a drag strip, I'm sure it's going to be very, very different. So what the gearboxes, two gearboxes, one on each axle. Other manufacturers have done that. Porsche and Audi have that on the Taycan and e-tron GT. Tesla tried to do it on the original Roadster, didn't succeed. How did you overcome the challenges of getting a gearbox to last, you know, in that kind of high torque environment? Because unlike with an engine, you know, when you lift off, when you're shifting, you know, you have a torque lull, so it relieves a little bit of the strain on those gears as you're shifting. You don't have that with an electric drivetrain. So how did you handle that?
Well, it's been a challenge, I'll tell you that. It wasn't like just we woke up one day and figured it out. But as you said, we'll have a multi-speed gearbox in there, and others are doing. There's a couple of very premium Europeans that have gone down this road, and that'll be a little bit of a difference for Dodge. Dodge bringing that into more of the mainstream performance muscle car feel. I can tell you that what we wanted to do, as you said, is we bring this power on, this torque on these machines, which we're not announcing the power or the torque level yet. That'll come out in the future. Is Tim's request from the Dodge brand is, why do you do a multi-speed? It's not an advertisement, it's a logo. He wants it to be about performance. So, as you know very well, is we need that low speed multiplier to get high torque, but we also want to be able to high speed and people on the highway. And by having a multi-speed, you can really take advantage of that torque multiplication like you do on a normal first or second gear. And then, so we can apply that. So we've got a lot of tractive effort that we got to put to the ground. We got to make sure that tractive effort doesn't come back into the gearbox, as you said, damage it. So we're spending a lot of time, and we've got some really sophisticated torque tools that allows us to design these gearboxes. We make gearboxes everywhere. We make millions of gearboxes. My team is experts in being able to design these gears. So it really, I don't want to make it sound simple, but it is really just basic mechanical engineering 101 that we've been able to do on this. It's a lot more difficult. As you said, we don't have that wind up and wind down. We don't have slipping of a torque converter. We don't have a clutch that can slip a little bit. So we got to make sure we get it right, because if the customers can do it, they will. We know that.
And how many gears have you got in there?
Multi-speed. Okay. At this time. That'll be a future announcement.
All right. The rest of the powertrain, the electric machines, what, anything you can tell us about that, you know, that you've done there that is unique to Stellantis or in fact, or unique to the Banshee as opposed to maybe the rest of your lineup?
So, you know, most of the world in electrification, the full BEVs are in the, I'll use a nominal number, 400-volt systems. As Tim announced with the Banshee, we'll be an 800-volt system, but we're not unique in 800. There's a couple doing 800-volt system. Some doing a, you know, 800, 900-volt system. And it's a very simple, instead of the mechanical F equals MA, it's getting into the V equals IR or the power equals VI. And so by raising the voltage up, we're able to deliver more power at the same current level. So that's really kind of the secret sauce we're working on, is how do we get more power out of the same battery. The battery technology exists today. Well, we've made some big announcements partnering with LG and Samsung. But that's kind of between the multi-speed, the 800-volt system, and really spending a lot of time in these drive units, we think we've kind of tuned it in very well. We've got a few surprises still to be announced about how we get the performance. When you see the performance numbers, will we be the fastest EV on the road today? As Tim said, maybe not the fastest, but it's going to be a totally different driving experience. I mean, as you know, you've been in these cars. They're getting to the point now where it's almost beyond the normal driver's capability to drive this. So we're going to be in that realm of the expert driver capability with the Banshee. And, you know, will someone have 5 kilowatts? Okay, the race of horsepower will become the race of kilowatts. But when you drive this vehicle and you see the performance of it, it's going to be remarkable.
Yeah, there's some hyper cars out there, like the Pininfarina Battista and the Lotus Evija, you know, that are in that 2,000 horsepower range, 1,500 kilowatts.
I can tell you we won't be there. How about okay. that?
And, you know,
for the price point,
and
we'll never be there.
And, you know, for a street car, I frankly don't think you should be. You know, I'm, you know, you see cars like the Model S Plaid out there, 0-60 in 2 seconds.
At least the first or second
on
time.
A street, on the street, you know, nobody needs that kind of performance. Yeah, you know, if you're taking it to the track, yeah, that's fine. But the drive units that you're developing for this, are those shared with the other Stella electric? Like, is that a common architecture with the other Stella electric platforms?
So as we announced last July at the EV Day, we've got the Stella platforms of vehicles. So Stella small, medium, large, and frame. This will be on the large platform. And then I also, when I presented, was the EDMs for that. So we talked about having 3 families of EDMs, kind of the 100-kilowatt version, the 150 to 250-kilowatt version, and we said the 300-plus-kilowatt version. These will clearly be in that family, but we've been given the latitude to take that family and put a little more behind it. So it'll be an extension of what we presented last year.
Okay. But the multi-speed gearboxes, that's something that, at least for now, is going to stay unique to Dodge?
Dodge is the first to announce what we're using it for.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, there are some other brands within the family that could possibly use that.
Right, right.
All right. Before I let you go, let's talk a little bit about the Hornet and the powertrain in there. That is the first Dodge electrified vehicle, plug-in hybrid. Tell me more about that one.
Yeah, just to start with, you know, the announcement we made in the Hornet is it's really bringing Dodge into that hot hatch kind of environment. So we'll have the entry level point of that, which is a crazy performing entry level, which is a full ICE version of that. And as was announced, the Hurricane 4 engine on that, which is our 2-liter DOC engine that'll be there. We're moving it up. The up version of that, at least up from what we've announced is available, will be the PHEV, the plug-in version. But as Tim said, we're not going to really worry about calling it a plug-in. It's just going to be a really high-performance electrified plug-in vehicle. So we have the 1.3-liter engine in there, turbo engine, which is performing in the European market today. We're bringing that over here. We're doing a little bit of unique calibration for it. And then the secret sauce is this EDM on the back end. Instead of using it purely for efficiency and regen capturing, we wanted to make it as performance-based as possible. And, you know, the power shot feature on there, so we're reserving a little bit of capacity in the battery so that when the customers want to have a 0-60 launch or a highway pass or on-ramp, they push this button, unleashes a significant amount of power, 20-25 horsepower of additional horsepower. It's kind of a fun little car. I've driven it around in Europe a couple weeks ago as we're doing the development. It's just fun. It is what Dodge wants. You know, it's got the special suspension tuning. It's got the special tires on it. My team's to deliver is, you know, over 30 miles of electric range. So if you plug it in, charge it up fully, you get 30 miles of electric range, which is great for that size car. Most of the drivers in the U.S. will drive 30 miles or less. With COVID, maybe 3 miles or less in the last couple of years. So it's going to be a no-excuse, fun-to-drive, exhilarating type of performance plug-in hybrid. And I don't even think the Dodge brand is going to even call it a plug-in per se. Obviously, it'll be the technology. He wants it just to be a really fun little hot hatch.
Yeah. And you mentioned power shot, and I forgot to ask you about that in the context of the Charger. Tim's mentioned the power shot. What's the strategy there? Is that basically kind of an overboost mode, drawing more power out of the battery
exactly.
for brief periods of time?
Yeah, so we'll do a little bit of reserve capacity on the power side of it, making sure, you know, when you enter in the mode, it's kind of like launch mode he has in the Durango
yeah.
today.
Making sure the temperatures are all in the right.
Right, make sure everything's after right, and then if it's good, then let it go. And what we're going to try to do is make sure that this isn't a 1-2 and you're done type of performance, which some of our competitors are doing, because they just don't have the sustainability of that kind of a power delivery. So this will be a repeatable power type of a feel. No excuses. You can go street light to street light or wherever you want to do it on drag strip over and over. So it's going to be a fun, fun little feature we put in there. And Tim's already mentioned that we'll launch with the Banshee system. It'll be produced with a couple of power levels, but then the Direct Connect, you're actually going to be upgrading the power level over the life of the vehicle. So it's kind of a little Easter egg that you revealed today, is we're going to be able to, with some work to be announced, is you may buy it at this power level. 6 months later, you may say, hey, I want to have a little more fun on this, and you can actually buy more power or more power, and we'll show you how that's going to be done later.
Okay. It's been really fascinating to watch the evolution of this company over the last year or so. For a long time, it seemed to be kind of stuck in the past. I love the Hellcat engine. It's amazing. Every time I drive something with a Hellcat in it, it's always been a hoot. But as you and Tim said, the world's changing, and you've clearly got a plan for how each of the brands, particularly Dodge, is going to stay relevant and true to itself in that new context.
Yeah, it's a fun place. I mean, I've been with the company now 3.5 years, and what I have seen in 3.5 years, I have a history with another automotive company. And when I grew up, when I came into this engine business, I've been in engines for 30 years. And my first assignment was trying to make the LS7 at 300 horsepower out of the small block V8. And to see what we're doing out of the Hemi today, I mean, we kind of ignored the guys up north of us when I was there. And what we're doing on the Hemi now is just remarkable. It gives us a 700 horsepower, 800 horsepower out of this legendary engine. But it's kind of getting to the end of its capability from regulation point of view, from CO2 point of view, what we want to do from environmental point of view. But what's really nice about Stellantis, even with after the merger, was and the leadership of this team is, don't give up on what your brands mean. And Carlos has made it very clear that the brands have a right to survive, and they got to prove what they want to do. And Dodge is the first of our big announcements. And our second announcement, you heard the Chrysler story, which was coming out in CES, and we're just going to build on that, and it's fun. I've had a lot of fun in my career. This is even more fun.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks, Mickey.
Thank you.
Always great to talk to you.
Yeah. Thanks a lot.
Finally, it's Jim Owens, the brand and marketing manager for Mustang and Shelby at Ford.
Sitting here with Jim Owens, the marketing and brand manager for Mustang and Shelby Ford. And Jim, you and I have known each other a long time. We worked together
more than a decade.
Yeah, worked together on the launch of the current generation Mustang. And when we were working on this stuff, GT350 and the S550 Mustang back in 2013, early 2014, did you imagine that now in mid 2022 that the best selling Mustang would actually be a crossover with batteries and electric motors and no internal combustion?
The long answer and short answer is no, I wouldn't have thought that it would outsell the Mustang, and no, we wouldn't have thought of an electric version of it. But propulsion systems have always been, being investigated. Carroll with his natural gas Cobra, and we've got video of him out there trying it out there in the parking lot in Gardena. Even back in if you think of the Indy 500 days when, Carroll even developed some of the turbine engine vehicles that were there to race. So they've always been experimental in there, but at pure electric in a Mustang in 2012 when we'd just done the Boss 302, mm-hmm. No, I probably wouldn't have thought of that.
So, as a longtime enthusiast, a hot rod guy, I know you love drag racing and motorsports and Shelby vehicles, going way back. How do you feel about a car like the Mach-E GT today being the best selling Mustang?
So, I'm glad it's part of the Mustang family, and the thinking about it when we were first talking about expanding the Mustang family brand. This car vehicle represents a lot of the same things
that Mustang represented in, you know, 1962, 63, you know, when Lee Iacocca and the Ford Fairlane Committee were working on the original Mustang. What that was a clean sheet of paper, new segment piece, that Mustang became, so that it wasn't the same car that your mom and dad drove back in the 60s, right? Well, if you think of what Mustang Mach-E is, in that electric vehicle space, this is kind of that fresh, clean sheet of paper, if you will, similarly to what Mustang was in the 60s. Like, you don't design, you know, electric vehicles with a big front grille. Right? I mean,
right.
This one has the big front grille and the pony proud and center. And so this was designed as a Mustang that had an electric propulsion system. And so for that purpose, I'm glad it's part of the Mustang family. From the performance aspects of it, I mean, you know, this car, like, especially the GT performance back car, like, we took it out at the Pittsburgh Vintage Grand Prix and gave charity hot laps in it. And we're running with a Corvette C4 and a BMW from their racing school. The acceleration, the MagnaRide suspension, the Brembo brakes that are on there, the suspension that was tuned at the Ford Performance Center down in Charlotte on our simulators there. Those are the things that are core to the DNA of Mustang. This thing is faster, the GT Performance Pack Edition, faster 0-60 than my Shelby GT500.
Uh-huh.
And now as that technology and that battery technology evolves, you know, you can picture the future tweakers and tuners. You know, when I was growing up, and I'm a little older than you, but, like, you know, we'd be adjusting our floats and jets in our carburetor, and we'd be messing with
the timing,
yeah, and taking off a distributor cap and rotor and, mm-hmm. you know, adjusting the distributor tang. You know, as tweakers and tuners have evolved, if you think now, like, you know, the Focus RS people or even the Mustang people, they'll plug their laptop in and start going into the ECA and start messing with it to kind of get the calibrations that they want. Well, if you think into the future, how they're going to be doing this with the battery technology, they're going to be doing the same thing. Performance people and those that love performance stuff are going to find ways to take what is made from the factory and advance it and move it to their performance tastes. All those things help make it a Mustang. The shape is like a Mustang. You wouldn't build an electric vehicle with that short hood and that dropping hood. You know, the back end, and I'm pointing in here. Oh, I know you can't see on the podcast, but I'm pointing. But the back there, that slope of the hood without where the painting is, is almost identical to the current Mach 1. The pony tri-bars right in the back, a different interpretation of it.
But you've got the visual DNA there that you look at it. You look at... you look at that GT500 across the way there, and you look at this, and you can tell that there's a relationship there.
There is a common thread in that family. And yeah, as much as I love, right, I still love the 60s era. My favorite one is the 71 Mach 1, right? I mean, I love that sloping hood, and a lot of them said those were the big fat boats, and a lot of people don't like those. Each of the Mustang owners probably have their own individual taste, but there is a consistent thread in the DNA of that makes this Mustang Mach-E a welcome and embraced member of the family. And now any good Mustang needs to have a Shelby derivative.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know if you saw at SEMA, Gary Patterson and the Merry Band of Hot Rodders unveiled and it'll be actually down here at Woodward, or at Nine Mile, down at Ferndale, a Shelby Mach-E GT. And that Shelby Mach-E GT has the deep draw hood in the frunk. So what they do is they utilize the frunk to cut out so that the air can come in and actually push on the downforce.
Uh-huh.
Like they did the aerodynamics for it. They're working with the battery company to tweak it from a vehicle that, you know, is trying to maximize range while delivering performance to be an all-out Shelby. Think of like the blowers we used to put on the 06s, right?
Maybe doing some more robust temperature management,
cooling.
Keep the temperature in the sweet spot.
Yeah.
Maintain the performance.
And so those are the type of things that are going to be tweakers and tuners will do, but any good Mustang needs a Shelby, and that Shelby version. Not only does it look like what a Shelby would be, and especially like the GT40 Cobra, like Daytona Coupe deep draw hood, it actually is functionally performing better, and that's going to continue to evolve. Like, I'm a geek. I love the old stuff. I still favorite car to take out on a track, Mach 1 is really getting pretty close nowadays. That car is a lot of fun. You know, it was that Posterio 2 that we did. Yes, I love those things, but Mustang as a brand to continue has to evolve. And this is a decent member of the family, and it is a embraced member of the family, and it is one that, with that GT performance package in and of itself, with the stuff that, we tweaked and tuned on it, can sit next to a Mustang from a performance basis, at least in a straight line in 0-60.
Yeah. One of the things about Mustang going back to the very beginning was that, you know, I think they had the tagline, the car designed to be designed by you. You know, it was all about customization,
personalization.
And so far, you know, from Ford Performance, like last year, you guys launched the Illuminator crate motor package so that people could take parts from this car and put it on, you know, do resto mods on other vehicles using the powertrain from this. Are we going to start seeing some stuff that allows the people, owners, to customize their, Mach-Es and turn it into something more?
I don't believe there's anything on the market right yet.
Right.
Right, at least from our perspective, from Ford's perspective, or Ford Performance, or the, you know, the old, the Ford component sales aspect of it. There is obviously some accessories that the vehicle personalization team does, but not unlike the tweakers and tuners we were talking about, the SEMAs and the aftermarket folks will find what is out there, and people who want to customize it, and when there is a market there, there will be a demand pull through that you're going to start getting those. And if you see, like, driving in Michigan, I know you do too, driving through, they are starting to customize. Like, this one was actually in Tulsa. We had a lady, her dad, she was 26, 27, mom of two. She had a Mach-E. She'd lowered the front, changed the hood, put these huge graphic stripes on it, and when we were doing the quarter miles, she lined up against her dad, who was in a GT500, and he blew the light, and she beat him, basically. Then they did the time in the dial-ins. But anyways, like, she's out there already customizing it. And as that demand, and as these get out into the hands of people who are enthusiasts, that demand will pull that through for sure. So yeah, I'm assuming we're going to see the same type of growth that you would see from the enthusiasts who buy it. Because this car also is, you know, bought by non-enthusiasts as well. But the enthusiast pool will start pulling that demand through.
Yeah, and I know this week you mentioned SEMA. They're opening a new SEMA garage here in the Detroit area this week. And I actually toured there a few months ago while it was still under construction. And some of the stuff they're doing in there is test cells, a couple of dyno cells, and labs where companies can come in and develop stuff for, software updates and things to modify EVs and other modern vehicles. Is Ford working with any of those companies and to assist them and, you know, or give them some guidance as to how they might go about some of that sort of thing?
I do not know the relationship on that. I know historically the Ford Performance Parts team or the Ford Racing Parts team would work with the SEMA companies to develop. Like, we used to give vehicles to SEMA when we participated in
there
for them to tweak and tune it the way that they wanted to show it with their parts on there. I'm assuming as that aftermarket develops, we'll be getting into it, but I don't know if we're doing it right now.
Okay. Let's shift gears a little bit, literally. We're a few weeks away from the 2022 Detroit Auto Show finally coming back. And one of the highlights of the show this year is going to be seventh generation Mustang. We've seen spy photos of it, and not surprisingly, the basic idea of Mustang, the classic Mustangs, is still there. But what's the overall theme direction that you're going with the internal combustion Mustangs?
We're going to learn a lot about that a little bit tonight. I think you're going to learn a little bit about that tonight at 7:30. One of the things in the little teasers that you saw was the six-speed, uh-huh. you know, the manual transmission. There were, you know, not rumors, but, you know, people posting on there, oh, the manual transmission is gone. And we wanted to lean into that a little bit, kind of tease it a little bit with that shifter in there. You know, the seventh generation Mustang will surprise people in the investment that we've put into that internal combustion engine. We're going to continue to evolve, and hopefully you'll see when we reveal the vehicle and then hear a little bit about it tonight that it's going to be about those enthusiasts. And it's designed with those in mind.
Yeah. I mean, you know, Ford was the first of the traditional brands, the legacy automakers, to bring out something like this Mach-E, you know, and go electric, you know, in one of their core categories, or at least with one of their core nameplates.
Yeah, Lightning and Mustang.
Yeah. And, you know, a couple of days ago, we saw one of your local competitors here come out with where they're going next. And it's a very interesting approach that they're taking, because they, they recognize, like you recognize, that there are still that core group of enthusiasts that love the noise and the visceral experience of driving a car like that. This car, you know, has some noise to it when you put it in unbridled mode,
yeah.
But it's not quite like what Dodge is doing. Do you think, is there still, like, how long is there a place in the lineup for an internal combustion Mustang that makes traditional exhaust sounds and intake sounds?
Yeah, and I mean, seeing what Dodge did, right? Uh-huh. It was impressive, the way they did it and how they announced their 23 and the last of it being their internal combustion engines. We were literally, like you said, the first to market with our brands, like with our F-Series and with our Mustang, to have that electric. And we know that there's also a desire and demand for that internal combustion engine. This allows us under the family to do those things and manage our CO2 and carbon footprint and, mm-hmm. you know, that where we can still do those things that those customers demand. I don't think there's a horizon for it that I can talk about. I mean, like, that you never know where we're going with it, but we're really excited to be launching that seventh generation where in that, you know, that next model year, we will have both electric and internal combustion engine Mustangs. We invested to do this seventh generation for it. And we believe that there's a marketplace for both.
Okay. Obviously, you can't get into the details yet at this point of the seventh generation car, but was there anything in particular that, you know, as far as what you're trying to achieve with the new car, beyond just extending the traditional? You know, is there any new kind of direction?
I'm really excited for you to see it in September. I really am. I mean, we can't talk about the specifics towards it, but, you know, I've been around at Gen 4, Gen 5, Gen 6, and now Gen 7, and there's a lot of cool things coming.
Okay. All right. Anything else you want to share about Mustang and kind of where the brand is going in the next 5-10 years?
Yeah, so the brand itself, like, the sports car segment has been shrinking, uh-huh. right? When we launched the Gen 6, or when we launched the Gen 5, for God's sakes, you know, we were a couple hundred thousand units a year uh-huh. those first 2 years. The segment size was, 2.5%. Now the sports car segment runs at about 1-1.5%. It's a little bit smaller. But the brand strength hasn't decreased. The Mustangs are still the most shared social vehicle from, regardless of age group, right? The boomers like me, we're eventually getting older. but what's nice to see is that they're, the people who are on social media who had generally are a younger audience are still participating and investing in that Mustang brand. And, we have to find ways to continue to feed that, right? I mean, from when we were growing up, the Matchbox cars, you know, all the way up and
I've got a bunch of posters. Yeah,
exactly. I've got them up sitting in there. Somebody found a 71 Mach 1 for me, which was really, really cool. And it was already opened out of the box, but at least I have it up there. But, you know, to the video games. Like, if you think, like, of Rocket League. I don't know if you've seen that or played that game, right? My girlfriend's son played it all the time. He's gone away to college. I'm sure he's going to be playing it there. You know, integrating, we did the Shelby GT350, the 65 version of it in the game. We did the Mach-E 1400, right? The Vaughn supercar. As it incorporating those things into... From the way that the younger generations interact is important to help keep that brand going. And it's nice to see that we're doing those type of things. So that brand, you know, we need to continue to bring those people in because boomers are starting to you know, go away. I mean, not go away, but like come out of that marketplace. But that brand is still strong amongst the younger ones, and we need to continue to do those things that support those enthusiasts. You know, from the person, the guy or girl who has their little Matchbox car, who has their Mustang pony on the wall at home, how do we keep them involved in the brand in the future? And we're excited about it.
All right. Well, I'm looking forward to see what you guys come up with for the new car. And it's going to be interesting next few years to watch as this market evolves, you know, with traditional internal combustion, electric, and everything in between.
Yeah, it is. It's going to be a lot of fun. And Carol, before he passed away, and we have him on video saying this, actually, he wanted to be around to see how electrification would work. He was interested more in the instantaneous torque nature of it, right? Yeah. From a racing and performance perspective. And I'm excited to see what's going to be going on. It's going to be fun. It keeps me young.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, you look at what Tesla has done with their stuff, and they've demonstrated that, you know, that instant torque and all wheel drive, you know, combined, you know, with lots of power, you know, can make ridiculously fast accelerating vehicles. And we've seen it with this one as well. So, you know, maybe blending something in there. Yeah. I mean, Ford's got some hybrid powertrains that, you know, you could probably fit into a Mustang.
It's
been hinted at it in the past.
The world is our oyster coming forward, yeah. and I can't wait to see what we do.
All right. Always great to talk to you, Jeff.
Always good, my friend.
And I've also got one question that came in this week from Gupta AJ on Twitter. He asked, F-150 Power Boost Platinum or Tundra Hybrid 1794 with the TRD off-road package, both 4x4. Which one would probably better hold its value 3 to 4 years down the road? And I already replied to AJ on Twitter, but I want to answer it here as well. So, you know, obviously, you know, for new vehicles, it's hard to project, you know, exactly what their residual value is going to be, you know, 3 or 4 years down the road from now, because, you know, a lot of things can change. But, you know, if we take a look back at history for the F-150 and Tundra, back before either of them had a hybrid option, you know, going back to 2018, you know, so 4 years, 4 years ago, residual value of the F-150 Platinum, and I looked this up on KBB.com, is roughly about $32,000 or so, $32,000 to $33,000. The same year, Tundra 1794 with similar mileage on it came out to about $34,000 to $35,000, so about a $2,000 difference. But I also went back and looked at what the original prices were on those two trucks. And I didn't go through and, you know, do exactly comparably equipped, but, just the sticker price for, the F-150 Platinum versus the Tundra 1794 was a similar $2,000 to $2,500, price difference. And the Tundra was a little bit more expensive. So each one of them had roughly the same depreciation over the last 4 years from 2018 till now. So more than likely, if you're, looking at the new ones, the hybrid versus hybrid Platinum versus Tundra, 4 years from now, they're probably going to have similar levels of depreciation. Not a whole lot to choose from. So basically, just pick whichever one you can get your hands on or whichever one you like better. Either way, you know, it's a good truck. The F-150 does have some features you can't get on the Tundra. The Tundra is, some people think that they may be a little more reliable. You know, take your pick. Either one's going to be a good choice. And that's it for this week, and we'll be back with the whole team next week. Bye. Did you know you can support Wheel Bearings directly? Head to patreon.com/wheelbearingsmedia, and you can become a patron today. Your contributions will help fund the platforms and tools we use to bring the podcast to you. And exclusives and improvements are already on the way thanks to your generosity. So if you want to be part of an automotive podcast like no other, head to patreon.com/wheelbearingsmedia.